morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Folks, welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me
is Mike Cosentino. We're trying a new format this morning. It's called Drunk Radio. Somebody was out really late last night.
Somebody else was not out really late last night. We went to bed early.
50% drunk radio. But I heard there was a march in Sedona, and I was there and you were there.
Yeah. It's the largest demonstration in March I've ever seen in Sedona.
Yeah.
And I've been here since 2003.
Right here.
Huge turnout, long march from the high school down. Lots of high school kids, of course. Former superintendents of school, former principals, teachers, people who had kids in school, and then the kids themselves spoke and had their rock band. And
Russ Snyder is a name close to a lot of people's hearts because he worked in all three schools here and is considered a student advocate that whole time. And he was a student advocate that day.
Kind of
Steve King spoke.
Great guy.
A great guy. He spoke before his daughter, Mackenzie King, spoke at senior at Mingus Union. And so they had a bus come from Mingus Union to have this joint school protest, this joint school statement called March for Our Lives right here in town to dovetail with what was going on nationally. Millions, all the news organizations that I can find, except Fox probably, yeah, are saying this is the biggest demonstration that they've ever had, bigger than the Vietnam.
I haven't seen anything since the Vietnam protest or the big civil rights marches. I haven't seen anything that big, huge, and frankly sort of inspiring. You know, we just can't let people keep killing our kids in schools. Something has to be done. Now, we can disagree about what could be done, but something needs to be done. We cannot keep having mass shootings with automatic weapons of our kids in school. Something has to be done, and it has to be done before more of them get killed. And I'm glad they're standing up and saying, hey, we don't want this anymore. I will say that for politicians who don't listen to this, and maybe you'd be okay in Arizona, but a lot of other places, if these young people start voting and they vote on this issue, a lot of people are going to lose their place, don't you think, Mike?
Absolutely. The NRA is very pervasive. It has lots of politicians in its pocket, the gun manufacturers. The NRA is not the NRA. It's not your grandfather's NRA. It's not your father's NRA. It's a gun manufacturing lobby.
And it's not the NRA that, you know, for example, I was a member of in high school
when there we you were go.
Hunting and stuff. It's a very different, it's extremist organization. It's gotten more and more and more extreme.
But I think people really have a hard time letting go of that, of what the NRA used to be and whatnot.
So I'm saying this was really sort of inspiring. I listened to those speeches, Mike, and I saw the kids demonstrating. Yeah. I saw the homemade signs as well as the official signs. And I thought they're really cool, and the kids were in their T-shirts, and it was very, very nice.
Yeah, now I'm going to switch sides. Steve Williamson here said it's not going to make a difference a couple weeks ago right here on the show, and I was full of the milk of human kindness and saying, no, you're wrong, Steve. This time it's going to make a difference.
I don't know.
So I'm going to ask the same question.
I don't know.
You're sounding like it's going to make a difference.
I don't know whether it's going to make a difference. What I'm going to say is if these kids get out and vote, and they vote on issues around gun control, and then it will change things.
Okay.
Because they're the lowest voting age group. They're the people who don't vote.
That's right.
And if they vote, it's going to be very, very good for Democrats and very, very bad for Republicans, because Republicans at this point don't have anybody willing to stand up to the NRA. And at least Democrats who are kind of on the other side of the aisle will do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least some of them will do
yes.
it. Yes. So we'll see what happens. But if they all get out and vote, things will change. If vote, Mike, then we're all going to be where we are.
While you have your crystal ball out, while it's still polished, let's talk about, is Stormy Daniels going to bring down DJT?
I didn't listen to Stormy. I think it's interesting that the Trumpster announced the expulsion finally of some Russians from the country, diplomats and spies. He finally did it, and he did it the day after Stormy was talking about him on 60 Minutes. So that's the pattern we see with this administration. Is this it's sleight of hand. What do they call that, Mike? There's a term for it.
Don't look at what I'm doing.
Misdirection.
That's it.
All right, it's misdirection. So every time anything really bad happens, and it's been a chaotic week for Trump. He tried to hire some lawyers, and then he couldn't. Yeah. His lawyer resigned. They're in a tough position because they have a sort of semi-insane defendant. And he's telling them what to do. He's not listening to them. And that's really tough. If you're a lawyer, if you can't control how the case is presented, you got a problem. So his legal team is in disarray. He's fired what we thought were the adults in the room. Now, all the people who are leaving, Tillerson is considered the worst Secretary of State in the history of the country. But some people say William Jennings Bryan was worse, but that's back 150 years ago.
Yeah.
He's gone, and maybe going to be more purges of it. And they brought some of the most extreme, over-the-top, crazy guys in the world in. Bolton is
Bolton.
Yes, he's a. I don't know. He's the most bombastic, extreme member of the Cheney administration.
What he's talking about?
I call
about,
it the Cheney administration, Mike.
Let's call it. That's a very good. I did catch that. The Cheney administration is accurate and belongs on a show like this. But he's the one that's talking seriously about, you know, the legitimacy and the efficacy of bombing nuclear.
He said that it was legitimate to attack North Korea, even though North Korea had done nothing to preventively attack them. He wants to tear up the agreement with Iran, which would be the United States unilaterally tearing up an agreement that it agreed to. I don't know what the Europeans, who are also signers, and China, and I believe China and Russia are also on it. I don't know what their response would be, but I think they'll ignore it. And I don't know, you know, there's this huge struggle between the Iranian Shiite and the Saudi Sunnis over the Middle East, as well as all, you know, if you look at the Syrian civil war, we've done some programs on it. Mike, everybody's got their thumb in there.
Yeah. Okay. Next, I want to talk about Wall Street. I want to talk about tariffs.
If you see that the Wall Street, the Richies really love this tax cut. I mean, the tax cut is like just put money in their pocket. And what they did was, They gave the middle class something they could see. Hey, here's some money for you. And then they gave all the real money to the rich.
Speaking of bait and switch.
it is, Mike. Yeah. And so that's what they did. And they knew better than just to give all the money to the rich and nothing to anybody else. People who got nothing, of course, are the poor. But, what to say about it? Well, the thing is that the rich really love the tax cut, but the other stuff that the Trump administration does, even though they love getting all this money in their pocket, it scares them because there may be inflation because tariffs are really a tax on American taxpayers. So if you're buying a car and it's, you know, $10,000, when they put a tariff on the price of steel, your price of your car is going up $250. The administration thinks that you won't notice this. So they give you $2,000 a year in a tax break, which is causing a huge deficit. Then you're secretly going to be handing them back $250 right off the top for the price that you're going to be paying for these tariffs.
So I love the way you've blended the tax cut and the tariffs, and quite frankly, we don't see that except maybe in some think pieces in the news. You've made this the same news, that the tariffs and this coming trade war that most pundits believe the U.S. will lose because China can do way more damage to us. I heard a figure of about $50 billion in tariffs.
I think the thing that the administration has to its advantage, Mike, is nobody else wants a fight.
Yeah.
You know, Europe doesn't want to fight. China doesn't want a big tariff fight.
Yeah.
Canada, Mexico, nobody wants a big tariff fight because everybody gets hurt. And so the Trump administration, to some extent, can kick people around for a while, and they're not going to do a lot. There's a kind of tipping point, I think, Mike.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so the tariffs are, you know, if you're a steel worker, they're good for you. Mm-hmm. If you're making cars, they're bad for you. Because the price of cars is going to go up, and then the number of cars is going to be fewer of them are going to be sold, and so forth and so on. So tariffs are really mixed bag, which is why people gave up on them, because they're really hard to negotiate and to maintain. So that's why you see the volatility in the stock market. They still love all those big tax cuts, because, you know, if you're a stockholder, you're going to get, I don't know, I don't have a statistic, Mike, but you're going to get the vast majority of the money that comes in from the cut in corporate taxes. The amount that's going to go down to the workers, very small. The amount you're going to get as a tax, as not as a taxpayer, but as a shareholder, very large. And so you've got this. The problem is the people with all the money want what Trump is giving them, but they don't trust him. And they think he's...
Or should they?
Yeah, they shouldn't. They shouldn't, because it's a lot of emotional stuff. He doesn't seem to care about how the world works. He just... He has resentments. And I think it's increasingly clear, Mike, that he has a real sadistic aspect to his personality. The way he fires people, the way he leaves them hanging. He likes to watch people suffer. He likes to watch them sweat. He likes to hurt them. If you work for him, he's not going to just going to give you a dignified exit.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you've been a general, you've been supported the United States for decades, and you're going to be fired in a very disgraceful looking way.
Yeah, nailing some poor FBI guy 2 days before his pension is like, that, you know, that's going to make him a lot of enemies. Working people don't like that. McKenzie at the bar last night even didn't like that.
I agree with you completely. That's something everybody understands. You're 2 days from your pension, and the guy fires you.
Yeah, you know, okay, you know, they might even if they resent the pension, they know that that's not plan fair.
And it's, as far as we know, the guy is being criticized for the way he treated Hillary Clinton. So it's just, you know. Here's Jeff Sessions firing this guy for not telling the complete story about how he gave permission to give, you know, anyway, to defend himself when he was attacked. And we've seen that before. You know, you're a public employee, you get attacked, and you can't defend yourself by giving out the facts. And he tried to give out the facts, and that's what they got him for. But we'll see what the evidence actually is. Maybe he did something worse, but I doubt it.
Well, the other thing, I mean, as if I'm going to play John Q. Public here, I'm tired. I'm tired of waiting. Robert Mueller, what, man? Hey, come on. Every day, every hour of every day, we got something that this, some outrageous, impeachable, fireable, low down and dirty thing that this guy does, and he's still president. I mean,
Mueller is a guy who stacks all the blocks very carefully. So you're going to have
stacking
a case
blocks.
Stacking blocks. Okay. Every little piece of evidence is going to be in its place, and he's going to build up this case.
Okay.
It's very slow. I mean, he's a methodical guy.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that Trump is in the fight with the most conservative wing or arm of the American government, the FBI. I mean, these guys are not, you know, a bunch of liberals running around. So that's kind of interesting. In other words, and they're not necessarily the friend of liberals. I mean, when I was in the anti-war movement, the FBI came around where I worked and tried to get me fired. I haven't forgotten that, that there was the old Hoover, FBI, they came around twice. They did things like they knew my girlfriend's name.
Wow.
They used that to intimidate me.
Yeah.
They tried to get me fired. My boss was an old petty officer in the Navy. And I won't use the language he used about the FBI, but he was having none of that. You know, he's not going to fire anybody because a bunch of guys in suits came around.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I look at the FBI with two two eyeballs, guess, yeah, you know, and I see both sides of it. But to be in a fight with them is extraordinary.
Yeah, of all. And that's what I love the meme that's going around the internet that, you know, you got a president that is belittling the FBI, you know, you got the, and yet praising Putin. There's something wrong with this. You know, this is like topsy-turvy government.
It is very, very strange. There's a new book out. I wish we could get the authors on Trump and Russia. And they're less convinced of one of the scenes in the dossier that really got the most publicity, but nobody was quite willing to talk about.
Yeah, right.
They're less concerned about that and less convinced that happened. The rest of it, they're pretty much make the case. It is very strange that he went first to Russia, I think about in the mid 80s, I think about 86. So he has a long trail there. And we see him going with prostitutes and with porn stars in the U.S.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he do that in Russia, which is famous for its prostitutes and friendly ladies? You know, I mean, given his character, if you told me that Jimmy Carter did it, you know, I kind of like, well, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know about Jimmy Carter doing it. And told me Ronald Reagan, Nancy would, you know, do terrible things to his body parts. So I wouldn't believe it, but Donald Trump, you know, it's very, very likely they've got a bunch of material.
And they'll just get him more votes at this point, I think. You know, those Christian women will line up. Don't ask me why. To save him, I guess. I want to mention this. Homeland, if you follow this television series on one of the premium channels, they did this wonderful explanation of the Russian influence. I mean, they showed it with, as TV can do, the beauty of television. They took a computer expert and showed exactly how the nodes light up on the internet worldwide screen, and which ones are sharing a piece of information with me that Putin is a crook or that Hillary's a crook, and then all of the ones that aren't "quote unquote" real, that aren't citizens,
and even when the Russians don't do it, for instance, the sheriff of the county or the Parkland shooting, he may be a good sheriff, he may be a bad sheriff, but somebody manufactured a series of tapes of him of a 17-year-old girl complaining that he got her pregnant and forced her to have an abortion. Political, to their credit, tracked her down, and she said she was paid to say it. It was all lies, that she didn't know him. But it got a couple of 100,000 views and shares.
The nature of the internet. Those guys weren't going to look back. They're not going to verify.
So there's a difference, I think, between conservatives, even far-right Tea Party people, and people who are willing to just make up slanderous lies to further their politics. I mean, this is a pretty despicable thing to do, and it's attacking some sheriff who we don't even know how responsible he was for the fact that his guys didn't go into the school.
But he's doing a job. You know, he's doing the job. You know, he's on the job. He's doing the job. Yeah, whether we want to criticize his job, well, that's a whole different topic. But to do this sort of thing, to take anybody, the public, as far as I'm concerned, to take a public servant, you know, feeding and, you know, doing a hard job for a little money is just the lowest, as you said, the lowest. It's just the low thing.
I will say, you know, when I worked in the early days of the internet and designed websites and manipulated photos so they would look better, I was a really you could analyze the photos. And you could see where they had been manipulated and distorted. It's gotten to the point that you can't do that anymore, Mike. And it's going to get worse. They're going to be able to show you anything through these fraudulent manipulations of data.
And one of the things we have this morning coming through the door is Desiree Perez, a representative of Planned Parenthood. She's going to tell us a little more about herself so we get a microphone in front of her. But one of the things we want to talk about are women's health issues. And so we got a women's health issues expert. But one of the things I like about Desiree Perez is that she is our expert on or among many things, our expert on voter suppression, at least voter registration. We have used her with our Cottonwood organization.
Tell us about the Cottonwood organization.
I will. We do want to talk about that, and I was hoping to get to that when we were ranting and raving about everything else. But yes, real quickly, I will tell you that we have a Cottonwood organization that is surprising me in numbers. So whatever's going on nationwide, and certainly DJT, Donald Trump is the greatest recruiter we've had for left.
Do you have regular meetings, Mike?
Next meeting is April 17th. We meet third Tuesday of every month at the Red Rooster Cafe. We have 50, 60 people come, and so many of them have their hands out, but they're trying to say, what can we do? They have their hands up. They want to do something. They are sick, literally, about the condition of their country. They want to do something, and we've got things that you can do. I'll cut it off there. Obviously, politically, part of the problem is, and you'll hear me say this, April 17th, 4 and 5 p.m., 4 for social, 5 for business. You want to come up, you want to chat with some of the candidates, come at 4. You want to buy me a beer, come at 4. If you're all business, come at 5. But you'll hear me say that whenever you get in political, that it gets multi-layered and it gets a little complicated. I'm going to try to keep it simple. You want something to do, I'll give you something to do. Hey, Desiree.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for inviting me to come talk to you today.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and where you're coming from, for Prescott, right?
Right. So my name is Desiree Perez. My title with Planned Parenthood is the Regional Health Coordinator for Northern Arizona. But essentially I'm an organizer, as well as an educator. I actually came to Arizona about 5-6 years ago, and I was living in the village of Oak Creek, and Mike and I had a bit of a short version of this conversation the other day, but I was living in the village of Oak Creek. I had moved from Southern California, so I'm a California girl by nature. I had left a partner back in California when I came out for a job at Village of Oak Creek. And we were trying to make the long distance relationship work, and it wasn't working. You know how it goes. And I found myself needing healthcare after the dissolution of that relationship. I needed to go get, you know, a pap smear. I needed to go get STI testing, all of that stuff. And I Googled Planned Parenthood, because when I think of sexual and reproductive health care, I think of Planned Parenthood. Growing up in Southern California, that was what was available, and that's what I used.
And they've been in Planned Parenthood has been around since what, something like 1916?
Yeah, 1916.
Began in the borough of New York.
Yep.
Margaret Sanger, and it's been going ever since, expanding, and tell us more about
it. Big favorite of Barry Goldwater, I must add here, as far as the Arizona connection.
Peggy Goldwater, actually. So Planned Parenthood as an organization has been around for just over 100 years, 1916. Margaret Sanger was actually arrested in New York simply for giving birth control information and pamphlets. And she actually retired or came to Tucson when she retired and started the first Planned Parenthood in Arizona in 1934.
Wow.
And credit to Peggy Goldwater, who founded Planned Parenthood of Northern and Central Arizona in, I believe it was 1967. And, we are now Planned Parenthood Arizona, which is a statewide affiliate, a combination of Margaret Sanger's Southern Arizona organization and Peggy Goldwater's Northern and Central Arizona organization.
One of the things Desiree and I were discussing were our personal anecdotes, as you heard, about Planned Parenthood, especially in Northern Arizona. As a college instructor for many years, I certainly heard about the lack of, at least in the Verde Valley, women's health care and Planned Parenthood, reproductive health specifically.
Yeah.
And the inconvenience, not just the inconvenience, the downright going to Flagstaff, which was all there was, a university, the closest university town, not necessarily a good thing, but it was what had to be done. And I'm just pointing out in my case, the lack of local clinics, the lack of timing, as is important in many healthcare issues, was sad. And, just wasn't enough clinics.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I have to say, it's still an issue. We have 8 health centers throughout the state, but in my opinion, that's not enough. And that's how I got involved with Planned Parenthood. So I was in Village of Oak Creek. I was needing health care, and I Googled Planned Parenthood, and the closest one was in Flagstaff.
Right.
And it's difficult when you're working and your work hours overlap with health center hours, and you have to drive 2 hours out of town to get to your doctor's appointment. I went somewhere locally, and I believe I did not get the quality care that I deserve. So after a bit of a frustrating struggle with that, I finally just took a day off of work, and I drove myself up to Flagstaff, and I basically took an entire day to get the quality of health care that I wanted and that I deserved. And it was the first time that myself, somebody from Southern California, where access is more readily available to health centers like Planned Parenthood, it was the first time that I had faced barriers that thousands of women across the country are dealing with, especially in rural communities like ours.
Very true. I do want to spin this around a little bit and say 8 healthcare centers, that's more than I expected, actually. I'm pretty pleased. That's good news. You came this morning with good news. We're here to... We try to scare people once again, like the Democrats do. It's what we do.
And
we
when I was young, there was no legal abortion. And girls in high school would disappear for like 9 months, or you'd hear that they got an abortion. And there was a whole secret-y network, informal network, that got women to abortion. It was extremely dangerous, and people got hurt, and several women in northeastern Oklahoma died.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reform of legalizing abortion, which I guess happened when I was in late in high school.
Yeah, 1973.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I say I was in college already. It was a situation where there was no legal abortion, for example. An abortion, of all the things that Planned Parenthood does, abortion is the most controversial, right?
But also not the major, if I may. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I think nationally abortion is about 3% of what Planned Parenthood Federation of America provides.
But that's what it's known for, even though it's 3%. Why do you think that's a political... Do people want to get at Planned Parenthood for other reasons than abortion? Or do they disapprove of as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, the whole idea of Planned Parenthood is the women taking control of their own reproductive life, right? And their own careers. Because what I saw when I was young, an early pregnancy just knocked you out of the job market. You're in college, you're doing fine, you get pregnant, you're gone. And so then you have to have your kid, it was a whole thing. You didn't have any kind of control. It seems to me, my interpretation of Planned Parenthood is to give the human being a control over this aspect of their life, the reproductive aspect of their life. Sexual aspect of their life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Planned Parenthood, as you mentioned, maybe the most well-known or controversial thing that, we provide is abortion services, but those are just one service throughout the really wide spectrum of reproductive health care that we provide. And it really is just about being a place where people can get medically accurate, non-judgmental, comprehensive sexual and reproductive health care. And it's true for women, having a child is one of the biggest economic decisions that a person can make in their lives. So having the ability to control when you get pregnant, if and how many children you're going to have, it does have a giant impact in the lives of Arizonans and people throughout the country.
It empowers women to take some control over their life that they didn't have before. So it's human beings deciding on how many kids to have and when, rather than sort of a well, people have different explanations, but a kind of lottery and stuff. So
I do want to mention that Desiree is not a national spokesman. She's but one of the things that the rest of us also know about Planned Parenthood is that it's been under attack financially. They've been going after the purse strings and of Planned Parenthood, and I at least nationally and statewide, locally, they have developed a whole different or a stronger, I think anyway. Please, and I even in your capacity, let me know if my perception is correct. Financial support. When I hear Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, doing months-long promotion for Planned Parenthood and giving and arranging for a lot of money to flow to the Planned Parenthood. Now, maybe it's not enough, but if we at least have maintained 8 clinics in Arizona, and I, once again, I don't expect you to give me national statistics, you know, a spokesman. But the idea that Planned Parenthood is not going away, it's recovered. The Republicans tried to kill it. This is a partisan show, by the way. So Planned Parenthood is a nonpartisan. We have nonpartisan people on there. We have Lee Women voters.
It used to be nonpartisan, Mike. Well, when I was young, Planned Parenthood was something probably more Republican supported than Democrats originally, at least in Oklahoma.
And it still is a nonpartisan issue. But we have them on. The show is partisan. The guest is nonpartisan. I'm just trying to give her the cover that she needs. But please tell us about where Planned Parenthood is today.
Right. Well, as far as the funding issue, anybody can look up our annual reports online, and they will tell you exactly where our funding comes from. But when we're talking about federal funding for family planning, when we're talking about the argument of defunding Planned Parenthood, and when I say defunding, I like to use air quotes. I'm doing that now.
Yes, we
it's
very, very nice air quotes, too.
I mean, that's right.
We can both see them.
It's a difficult radio move.
Even with our aging eyeballs, we can see the air quotes.
But it's not. I feel like a lot of people, even Planned Parenthood supporters, don't know exactly what that means. And I think it's important to note that there's not some line item in the federal budget that says Planned Parenthood and it has some kind of dollar amount. When we're talking about federal funding that comes to Planned Parenthood, we're talking about funding that comes through patient services, whether those patients are in the Medicaid program or they're using Title 10, which is federal funding for family planning. So these are programs that are specifically designed to help low-income and under- or uninsured folks access preventative health care services, access reproductive and sexual health care services.
So there is no line in the budget that says money for Planned Parenthood.
No.
It's money for this process, and Planned Parenthood is the largest provider.
Well, I don't know if we're the largest provider of Medicaid services, for example, but I know that we are a very large provider of sexual and reproductive health services in the country. And when we're talking about defunding Planned Parenthood, what we're talking about is, are we going to make it harder, or are we going to make it impossible for people who are using programs like Medicaid and Title 10 to choose Planned Parenthood as their providers?
Well, the other Desiree Perez that we're talking with this morning.
The other point I'd like to bring up, Mike, is none of this federal money that Desiree is talking about goes to provide abortions, right?
Right.
It's against the law to provide abortions with the federal money, federal tax money.
Right. And that's due to the Hyde Amendment that was passed in 1976, and it gets renewed with the budget every single year, which makes it illegal for Medicaid funds, federal funding, to go to abortion care.
So that's not enough for the conservative and the right, Mike, the fact that there's this compromise where no federal money goes to abortion.
Believe me, I don't try to. Their behavior is beyond explanation. I mean, it's hateful. It's damaging. And so, no, I'm not wasting time discussing conservative behavior. I am going to use productive use of time and talk about your other expertise, and that's voter registration.
Sure.
And maybe touch on, because I think it's coming, it's going to be a topic of this show, because they're going after it big time. They see, you hear things, and you see things on the internet of talking about the blue tsunami, the election in Pennsylvania recently, where the gentleman won the Trump district that Trump won by 20 points. He squeaked out a win. What about, as a voter registration advocate for Planned Parenthood, what do we got coming up? What are we trying to do? How are we going to save this? Save us. Desiree, well, save us.
Please. I'm doing my best. I'll give a little context by going back to last year. So last year, I can't tell you how many people I met for the first time who came out of the woodwork saying, I've never considered myself to be a political person. I've never been involved. I've never really been civically involved in my life, and I want to do something about it.
Yeah.
And those people signed up in droves to become Planned Parenthood activists and supporters. I think nationally we've had over 200,000 folks take action. We've had over 2 million petitions signed since 2017.
Wow.
And what we're trying to do, because we are a nonpartisan organization, we want to go out there and we want to do voter registration. We want folks who have not been civically engaged before or people who just need to update their registration to make sure that they can have that voice. But in addition to that, we are engaging our volunteers, our community members. We're making sure that they know what's happening in their communities, in their state, and in the country, so that way they can take action if these are issues that matter to them.
A slogan I like that people are using now is that not voting is not a protest, it's a surrender. Not voting is not a protest against the system, it's a surrender to what's happening. I think that's an excellent, I saw that one of the people at the march had that slogan.
And I think it's so y'all were talking about the March for Our Lives earlier in the show.
Yes.
And I was there on Saturday, and I was registering voters with a couple of my volunteers. And a good number of the people that we registered that day were teenagers. Teenagers who were there because this was an issue that mattered to them. And when we were talking with them, what we were saying is, I'm glad that you're here at this march, and I'm glad that you're making your voice heard. And if you register to vote, that is another way to make your voice heard. So that's what we're really working on, making sure that the people in our communities have that chance to go to the polls and make their voices heard.
Well, and that's it. And regardless of registration party, you know, obviously you have to declare something. No, you don't. You don't have to declare. You have to put some. You have Democrat,
the
Republican.
Party is the independent party.
Exactly, and
leave, which is not a party.
Exactly. So the idea is, it doesn't matter. Desiree is saying on a nonpartisan basis, and even Mike Cosentino is saying on a nonpartisan, when he registers people to vote, I always have voter registration forms in my car somewhere close by. I register everyone. I want people to, because the theory is that reason. You know, although I don't see much of it in older Republicans, even a Republican can see a reasonable position or vote for a reasonable candidate and therefore deserves to be registered by Mike Cosentino. Deserve to be registered by anyone, but I have to admit my reluctance to register the other side, or at least my distaste. Is present, but I try not to show it. The idea is that voting is voting is voting, and everybody, at least still, one of the reasons I like Democrats is they, at least outside the Beltway, we still believe in this basic American right. I have one member of my group that keeps harping on the 32 original voting rights. I have no idea what the 32 voting rights are. I can tell you, I don't know, there's got to be four or five of them anyway, you know, being able to, you know, vote and you know, in the place of precinct of your assignment and that sort of thing. But as they flush as they try to suppress the vote from here on out, people like Desiree, people like, as far as I'm concerned, Democratic Perspective, need to be vigilant and register to try to make up, I think. I don't know, what else can we do about voter suppression? What else can we do when they flush the voting? You know, you're saying, look, what are you looking at me for? I have no idea.
Right. I don't work with the county recorder's office, and I'm not that much of an expert when it comes to what happens after we cast our ballots.
Right.
What I do know is that, you know, if we want our communities to be involved and we want to see change happening, real change, it's got to start at that local level. It's got to start with folks like my volunteers or yours going out and just talking to their neighbors, talking to the people that they meet at the grocery store and asking them, are you registered to vote? Would you like to get your ballot by mail?
Right.
And you know, that grassroots interaction and involvement is what filters up and creates, you know, big political waves.
I'm going to throw this to you, even though I know the answer. Why should we want them to vote by mail?
Oh, well, it just makes it that much easier for you to make sure that your vote gets in. We never know what life is going to throw at us. Your child might get sick. You might have to work late in the day. You might not be able to make it to the polls on election day.
What's the biggest complaint you hear about? I registered one voter yesterday, and she would not check the people box. What's the biggest reason you get for not registering to get a mail-in ballot?
I think people have a concern that their vote isn't going to count.
Absolutely.
I've heard people say, well, if I mail in my ballot, how do I know that my vote counts? And from what I understand, there's a website that's linked to our county recorder's website that allows people to check and see if, in fact, their mail-in ballots were accepted and counted. What's really great about the mail-in ballots, though, you get them early. You get a chance to study your ballot. You get a chance to educate yourself on all of the issues before. I've definitely shown up to the polls and known a couple things that I wanted to vote for and then been blindsided by a few other things on the ballot. And,
right. Everybody has.
Yeah, I don't want to end up in that position again, so yeah. I am permanently voting list.
When I was door, we had to pass out a description of what the propositions were because they're so crazily named. Well, a lot of times it's the exact opposite of what they're about.
We had to have at least one meeting, if not two or three. I want to get these announcements in before we run out of time. Join us on May 1st at the Mary Fisher Theater. This is, you've seen this movie, Beck, you've seen maybe trailers or advertisements of Backpack Full of Cash. This is narrated by Matt Damon, and I believe he had at least something to do with the making of it. The print's too small for me to come close, but the Backpack Full of Cash, May 1st at the Mary Fisher Theater right here in Sedona, 4 p.m. and 7 p.m.
It's won a number of awards. It's a really exciting and interesting production. I think there's going to be an ask you for a $5 donation to help cover the cost, Mike. But that's an important thing for people to do because it's about the funding.
Yeah, let me read the
go ahead and read
the Matt Damon quote. Backpack Full of Cash helps us realize that true education equity will come when we address the deeper issues underlying education inequality, such as child poverty, racial segregation, and unequal funding of our schools, and especially number three, unequal funding of our schools is now we are trying to raise money, folks, to get this movie shown in Cottonwood. You can see it May 1st right here in Sedona, 4 p.m., 7 p.m., Mary Fisher Theater. If you got a little extra cash, we're going to be passing the hat at the April 17th meeting in Cottonwood. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks, our continuous benefactors on Democratic Perspective. We want to thank Steve Williamson. We want to thank Desiree Perez this morning from Planned Parenthood for being our eloquent guests. And we want to remind you that you can listen to Democratic Perspective, this podcast, and all our podcasts on vvid.org. You're holding a piece of paper.
Oh, I just wanted to remind everybody that if you are in Northern Arizona and you want to support Planned Parenthood, April 12th is our annual dinner in Flagstaff, and you can definitely attend that.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.